This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
I'm over here doing vocal exercises and Brent's coughing out his cold.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. I'm trying to pretend like it. Nothing wrong with my voice. It's just sexier than usual.
That's it.
All right. Welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and we're going to talk about things happening in the legislature this hour, this noon hour here on KYKN. A few topics we haven't hit very much. There's so much going on over there with those 3,000 bills, and we hit the big ones as much as we can. But this hour, we hope to hit things having to do with death with dignity, changing our laws in Oregon regarding that, some gun control laws, and some campaign finance reform. Hopefully, we'll have time to hit all these because near the top of the hour, end of the hour, we're going to talk to Bri Taylor from Marion County Fair.
Oh, awesome.
And talk a little bit about Marion County Fair coming up in about a month or so and what kind of fun things we can do there.
So we do actually have time to talk about all these bills probably for the next week or so.
Yeah.
You heard what the legislature is doing now. They're reading all the bills.
Oh.
But one of them, the Republicans kind of put this into effect where they have to learn what's all in the bills. So they're making them read all of them. And one of them, they said, would take 3 days to read.
Oh, my gosh.
That's how big that bill is.
Well, that sounds like...
I don't know which one it is, but it's going to take them a while.
Sounds like the Democrats passing that, you know, bill, the Obamacare bill, right?
You're right.
And they, oh, well, we don't really know what's in it because it's 1,100 pages or whatever.
That would take a while.
All right, folks. Hey, and if this is your topic, give us a call. We welcome your conversation. Call us at 503-393-1430 if you want to weigh in on any of these topics. I'm going to start with death with dignity.
Okay.
Seem to be a lot of social issues for today's show, but obviously it's the law of the land in Oregon. It's controversial.
Right.
Other states have adopted it, but I believe Oregon was first. And there's a couple of changes. They're basically fixes. They're not doing away with it. They're not blowing it wide open, but Senate Bill 579 would allow doctors to prescribe medication faster. So right now, folks, these are the precautions. You need to, let's say you have to have less than 6 months to live, according to more than one doctor.
Oh, wow.
You need to orally request that death with dignity process. Then a 15-day waiting period. Then you need to request it again, orally and in writing. And the writing has to have a witness that's not a family member. And then when those second 15-day period is up, you have this 48-hour waiting period before a doctor can prescribe. Okay.
So it's 32 days.
Yeah, at least. At least.
At least, right? Okay.
Mandatory. So Senate Bill 579 would allow a doctor to prescribe the medication faster without the 48-hour waiting period if the patient has less than 2 days to live. So obviously we're talking very, very end of life and probably a lot of pain. So that would shorten that up. That's one of the fixes.
You have 2 days to live and you can only get the death with dignity 2 days before you're expected to expire? Really?
No. That 48-hour waiting period, that's after the 15-day waiting period and so forth.
Okay.
They're just saying you don't have to wait. If you've only got a couple of days to live, the doctor can prescribe the end-of-life medication, mm-hmm. right, and not have to wait the additional 48 hours.
Wow.
Okay. So another one had to do with giving people, shortening that waiting period if they only have 2 weeks to live kind of thing. So again, current law, you have to wait 15 days, orally request it, wait again, another oral request, 15 days later, then a written request, and then 48 hours, a prescription cannot be written until after it's been submitted. 168 people in Oregon took advantage of this law in 2018. They died as a result of prescriptions they received through the Death with Dignity Act in just 2018. 168 people. So it has been going up. I mean, this was passed in 19... Actually, it was passed. It went into law in 1997, about 3 years after it was passed by the voters. in 1998. It, ever since then, it's been increasing how many people are using it. Even, you know, there was that famous case where people were moving. A woman was moving to Oregon just for the specific purpose of it.
Yeah, I remember that.
So, and the person, to even start the process, you have to have been determined that you have less than 6 months to live.
By more than one doctor.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's interesting. I know that there's some concerns. We have Representative Linthicum, Dennis Linthicum. He's a Republican from Klamath Falls. He has concerns about it. He doesn't think the safeguards are strong enough.
What?
And he's worried about elder abuse or people taking advantage of somebody who's in their latter days and, you know, I don't know, kicking off grandma for her money. I don't know. But if you're talking about...
Obviously hard to do with, you have to have more than one doctor. Mm-hmm. You have to have a couple of requests, one of them in writing with non-family member. So, yeah, that pretty much covers that, doesn't it?
So, according to Representative Linthicum, this is a quote. My concern with the bill is that it'll push Oregonians closer to euthanasia, and euthanasia will harm the most vulnerable class. The waiting period is not an impediment, and it seems to me Senate Bill 579 will target a vulnerable Oregonian based only on their status and health. So he's linking it, of course, to it is a huge problem of elder abuse.
I agree that it does happen. But a lot of steps have been taken to prevent that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, facilities that you put grandma or grandpa in are inspected, right?
Oh, yes. But we know there's some elder abuse going on in some of those as well.
Hmm.
So on the flip side, on the Democratic side, Senator Elizabeth Steiner Hayward, she's a Democrat out of Portland. She's one of the chief sponsors. She just thinks they're helping people. This is her quote. This is merely helping a small subset of Oregonians who want to have dignity and control in the last days of their lives when they're facing a rapid, rapid demise. They deserve that from us. They deserve to be given this opportunity. This is a moral question for a lot of people.
Yeah.
And, you know, the question is for the state and for us as citizens and the people who represent us, do they leave it up to us to decide the moral decision? Or does the state decide the moral decision, right? So right now in Oregon, you can make that determination.
Because the voters voted for it.
Does it violate, you know, if it violates your religious code and creed and belief system, then you don't have to do it.
Right.
But then do you have a right to say, I want to prevent you from doing it. I want to keep you in pain. I want to force you to stay in pain and not end your own life.
Right.
It's a tough emotional. I mean, anybody who's gone through it and alive with relatives and so forth, it's very, very emotional because it does intersect with the very core of life with us and the very core of people's religious beliefs, which mm-hmm. I will fight to the very end in every case. I guess not every case. Okay. So interesting vote, though. Senator Peter Courtney out of Salem, our Senate president, he voted against it. It was a very unusual case because he's the Senate president, and usually he doesn't allow bills to go to the floor that he doesn't favor.
Hmm.
So he did, as he says, it's a personal vote for him.
Sure, it is.
He felt, no, he did not want to close these loopholes or make it easier. He wanted to maintain the status quo, right?
Yeah.
So he said, no, it's a personal vote, but he did let it go to the floor to be supportive of, you know, his committee chairs and the caucus and other people in his party that wanted it to go to the floor for a vote, but then cast a personal vote for now. So I appreciate that.
Well, at least the voters had a say in it and got it in the statutes.
Yeah, you realize, like, in the U.S. House of Representatives, a bill doesn't go to the floor unless Speaker of the House says it can.
Right.
That's an insane amount of power, people.
Right.
That isn't 435 people want a bill, but if that person doesn't want it, it doesn't go to the floor.
And that person's third in line for president.
And it's a partisan person.
Right.
That's really crazy, folks. Anyway,
she's not partisan.
If you want to weigh in, 503-393-1430. If you don't want to weigh in, we're going to talk about the gun bills. One dead. One not dead, but gun control bills on the docket. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN, Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape. Brent, we have a caller.
We've got a caller who wants to weigh in on a discussion having to do with the Death with Dignity Act in Oregon. Art, you're on the line.
Good morning. I mean, good afternoon, guys. Yeah, hey. I'm dead set against this bill for one reason. My mother had Alzheimer's and dementia, and, of course, she digressed over the years. Finally passed away. I got to watch over. What I'm concerned about is the state of Oregon, who have control over many individuals like that, just going ahead and kind of putting them to sleep because of the money aspect of it. And so I do know the assisted living place that my mom was in had several people who didn't have family members watching over them, taking care of them and stuff like that, and they were just kind of wards of the state. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm concerned about, them putting people to death just because the state has control and can do that.
So I have a question for you. I don't know the answer to this question, but if they have dementia and or Alzheimer's and then they cannot therefore give consent to request, right? Are you worried about abuse having to, Mrs. Johnson told me mm-hmm. that she wants to die. Is that the concern or?
Well, yeah, I am concerned about that. And truthfully speaking, they don't have, when they have Alzheimer's and dementia, they don't have complete understanding of, what people are asking them. And so I do believe that in certain cases they may take advantage of that. And that concerns me, so.
I don't think I've ever heard of a case like that, though, Art. Do you know of one?
Well, no, yeah. I don't.
I think there's regulations against that, where people who are of the state or controlled by the state, that they are not going to give them the death with dignity thing just because they have dementia or whatever.
If they have dementia, they can't consent.
Yeah, they can't consent to that. So there's a lot of loopholes with that, but I've never heard of the state doing that.
Well, like I'm saying, I'm concerned about it.
Yeah.
I can't say for sure that it's ever happened. However, I do believe that it could happen and mm-hmm. might happen, and therefore, that's why I'm concerned about this.
I got it. So yeah. You're in line with Senator Linthicum, huh? Linthicum. I always want to say Linthicum because of the pitcher, but it's yeah. Linthicum of Klamath Falls. He's concerned about, we don't want the state to be in the business of euthanasia. And if we take the dementia out of it and say someone's just in pain, chronic pain, and they're on Medicaid, I think what I'm hearing Art say is, you got somebody who's completely being supported by a taxpayer and they're on Medicaid, and the government gets to say, well, I think Mrs. Johnson's, getting close to death, and maybe we should, so forth.
I get that.
Yeah, I think that might be why Senator Courtney voted against it also, for that very reason, that there might be abuse. And I can't speak for him, of course, but no, I am in total agreement with Senator Linthicum that, it just scares me that this death with dignity thing will be abused.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate that.
All right. Well,
that was Art calling in on the proposed changes to the Death with Dignity Act in the Senate Bill 579 to basically speed it up, depending on the lifespan of the person who's requesting it. Right. So you don't have, if you've got 2 days to live and it's going to be agonizing pain, they don't have to wait the 2 days.
Got it.
Right.
So I understand Art's concern for sure.
And the 15-day waiting period would also be shortened if they have less than 15 days to live. So you can't make them wait 30 if they got 15 days to live.
Yeah.
Okay.
Makes sense.
All right. Shall we move on?
Yes, please.
And if you want to weigh in, 503-393-1430. We could still take another caller before we get on to later in the hour talking about the Marion County Fair. Gun control, interesting, because we didn't have a chance to talk about it yet, but the Bill got killed in the swap to get the education package, also known as the tax package here, passed. So in the political machinations, this gun control bill got tossed off to the side. Nobody really thinks it's gone forever, of course.
But no,
they did
of course
agree
not.
To kill it for the session. And now the Republicans are going to have to, if they want to prevent this from coming back and getting passed later, they have to get a lot more Republicans elected.
Ooh.
So the one that died, let's talk about that. It was Senate Bill 978. So that one was, had legs, but it was going to require anyone who has a gun to have safe gun storage, locks and da-da. They're going to tell you, they're going to specify how you're going to store your guns.
Isn't that already on the books?
I don't believe so. It placed liability. Here's the worst part that most people had an issue with. Placed liability on gun owners. If a gun is stolen, but you didn't report it, and then that gun is used in a crime and it injures a person or property, that the liability can fall on the original gun owner, even though they didn't do the crime because their gun was
stolen. That's like blaming the manufacturer for making the gun.
It also outlawed untraceable and undetectable firearms, granted local authorities the power to regulate firearm access in public buildings, allowed retailers to set a higher minimum purchasing, so go from 18 to 21 if they wanted to.
Oh, wow.
So awesome. But that's the one that died.
Okay.
Okay. So there's...
Hopefully it stayed there.
Yeah. We're going to see it in February.
I know
it's going to be back in February.
Next session.
So what they did do, the senators recently passed a bill that does one of those things, and it keeps guns out of the hands of domestic abusers and stalkers.
Now, see, that one makes sense.
Yeah. So Governor Brown, of course, she favors all of these things.
Sure.
But she called this one the domestic violence bill. And it has to do with people having restraining orders, those type of orders. In domestic abuse situations, that abusers should not be able to carry a firearm. So, and here's, you hear politicos talking about this, but it's all about incremental progress. This is why the NRA has a zero tolerance for gun control, right?
Sure.
Because they don't want to do incremental process until it slowly starts eroding away. And here's the quote from Governor Brown. We have been able to make incremental progress as I've been governor, and we will continue to do so in a strategic and thoughtful manner. So all of these things
they want. So she pretty much laid out exactly what she's doing and chipping away at all the rules and all the rights that you have to own a gun.
Yeah. So they consider it a loophole, that this is a loophole close that allowed domestic abusers to hold on to their firearms, when they're subject to certain court protective orders also.
Yeah.
And in the Senate, the majority leader, Jenny Burdick, she sponsored the gun measure that died. It didn't die. It just got traded away.
Okay, yeah.
But
she put it in the closet temporarily.
She has vowed to work on gun reform in the future. It's going to come out again. So, and there's an interfaith group called Lift Every Voice Oregon. And they're tying youth into this because it's all, it is politics. If you make it about the kids, you can't really say no. And
okay.
But their quote from Lift Every Voice Oregon, youth have cried out for an end to gun violence. In some recent cases, youth have even felt compelled to sacrifice their lives to save their classmates, as we as adults must do more to protect them. So.
Okay. I'm going to say it again.
What?
And I've been saying it, well, maybe not on the radio, but I'm going to say it on the radio now.
Oh, boy.
Okay?
Lay it out.
The reason that there is gun violence in schools and movie theaters and such, where people gather, is because they're gun-free zones. They know they're not going to experience somebody fighting back against them. They can just take people out like sitting ducks. If there was a peace officer or teachers with, a licensed firearm that was somewhere, in it, maybe even a safe in the classroom, there wouldn't be the school shootings that we have been experiencing because there's somebody there to protect them. When you got no protection, that's where they happen.
You know, I think this ties and circles right around. We were talking about this in mental health in our society and our society's own illnesses in terms of a lot of our listeners. I dare say a lot of our listeners in Polk County, they grew up with a gun in their car on their way to school.
We had one too.
Because they hunt.
Yeah.
And this and that. And it's just tradition. And in rural areas all over the country, this was not an issue, you know, 50, 60 years ago. So what has changed? It's not the guns. The guns really haven't changed. It's what's going on in our mental health, in our societal health. We had some feedback yesterday.
And yeah.
I got to find this because
even 25 years ago when I lived on a farm in Eugene, we had a gun rack in the pickup. Yeah. Never had a problem with it. We used to play BB guns out in the field.
Why is it acceptable? We were talking about teen suicide rate. And
yeah,
I did reach out to Dr. Chandra Geary to see if he'd come back on the show and talk about it. And we got a response from one of our listeners. And they're saying, and she basically was saying, look what we're being taught in our society, that the world is ending due to global warming. The world is coming to an end, and all our and the fact that we exist is part of the problem, and that America's evil and the worst country in the world, and white privilege and all my ancestors did, that's the problem. And they're teaching them that, and they're teaching them that they have no hope for success due to unfair salaries and evil corporations. And if I choose college, I'm never getting repaid. If it's just dreary, dreary, dreary.
Mm-hmm.
And never mind everything else that they've taken out of school in terms of prayer, in terms of discipline, in terms of all these other things. But, you know, it goes far beyond my understanding, folks. It goes far beyond what we can solve. But it is a sign of illness in our society that people will get to the point where they think that this is an option. Killing strangers in a public place and targeting people with guns is an option. And I don't know. I'm not so sure these gun control bills will even do those.
But, no, they wouldn't.
Maybe if they can prevent some deaths of school kids.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Brad's on the phone. We'll take his call after the break.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll go to Brad. We're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Colored Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center. We have Brad on the phone talking about the gun bill. Brad.
Brad, you with us?
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm right here. Hey, thanks for having me on.
You bet.
I testified against this bill, or any version of this bill, or this piece of legislation for that matter, because I was actually the victim of a claim of this nature. When I was going through a nasty divorce some years ago, my ex was very vindictive, and she charged me with some kind of a threat or something, and had my gun hit. I had this leveled against me. And so, of course, I had to follow the law and had to give up my weapons to a friend of mine who was a retired state trooper, and had to go before the court and plead my case. And immediately, the charges were dropped because it was obvious that they were bogus charges, and got my gun rights back. But the upshot of the whole thing was that I had to go in and prove my innocence. I was charged and considered guilty until I had gone in and proved my innocence. And that's not how things are supposed to work in this country. We're supposed to be innocent until proven guilty.
Right.
Now, something else that bothers me about the whole concept of having this type of a law to protect women is it's really kind of offensive. It should be offensive to women, at least, in my view, because it presupposes that women are helpless victims that need the government to protect them. Well, I can tell you categorically that neither of my daughters are victims. They've been trained in a very effective use of firearms from the earliest age, and they're the last people you want to cross.
Mm-hmm.
True. Yeah.
Well, let's hope they don't abuse their husbands, right?
They should focus on empowering women by, you know, backing off of gun regulations in general, because I really do subscribe to the notion that all gun laws that restrict ownership of weapons they're unconstitutional. They truly are. Women should be encouraged to go out and buy guns and take courses and so on. But we're going the other direction. And as a result, we're becoming a helpless society of victim mentality types that, you know, lean on government to protect us, cover us, to be there, to be our all-in-all in every situation, which obviously doesn't work because law enforcement is horrendously outnumbered by bad guys.
Yeah, and I think you're bringing up the point that a lot of people had concerns with is just the sheer allegation of that this person is dangerous, this person is volatile, this person issued a threat, and boom, they take action.
Yeah.
Right? And I guess what the government is saying is we'd rather take action first and prevent something from happening and then allow you to state your case and get your gun rights back.
Well, you know, that can go the other way, too. I mean, men are not the only people that can get abusive in a relationship. There's plenty of instances where women can get just as physically abusive, which is not the norm by any stretch, but yes, statistically, that's out there. That statistic is verifiable, and it is out there.
I agree.
It would be terrible if a woman was accused of that was not guilty of that and had her rights stripped and then became the victim of an abuser who used this law to gain the upper hand.
Absolutely. Brad, thank you so much for the call. Yeah, exactly. He was pointing at the point that I was bringing up earlier is, you know, guilty until proven innocent kind of thing. And it's sad to see that we're a society that is trying to strip those guns away from us to help us protect ourselves. Like you said, 20, 30 years ago, there were people in rural areas had guns in their pickups all the time. There was never a problem like that.
Yeah, it is a conflict of due process. On the other hand, we also don't want our daughters and mothers and fall victim because the authorities wouldn't listen.
Yeah,
and the person has is imbalanced and blah, blah, blah. And, oh, do we err on the side of being protective or do we err on the side of due process or do we find a balance in the middle and which is fair and what's going to be a forever argument, right?
Yeah, exactly. So
those are tough questions today. Tough
you
questions.
Know, you
we
brought
could
it up.
Debate these for a long, long time. Some things are reasonable, sound like a reasonable argument, and then there's a flip side to it. And you know, to its credit, the bill does not say women. It says domestic abusers, is my understanding. So it doesn't matter if it's a woman
way.
Or a man who is the domestic abuser or the gun owner.
As Brad pointed out, yes, it can go both ways.
The boyfriend rule. And, you know, folks, watch these because all those other things about telling you how to store your weapons and what type of thing and how you can lock them and all those things having been mandated from the state, it's going to be back. It's going to be back in February, I'm sure, when the legislature convenes again. It's only going to die for this term, for this session of our state legislature. All right, we got a few minutes. Let's just do the tip of the iceberg. Maybe we'll continue on this tomorrow with campaign finance reform. Very interesting topic to me. Another one of those topics where it's really hard to have an answer. It's really hard to say corporations can't give at all or corporations can only give X amount. But if you're a person, you can. Campaign finance. So there's three bills under consideration that are trying to set limits. All of us on the surface, I think, and left and right would say, hey, campaign finance is a mess. There's too much money in government. There's too much money in elections.
Yes, so I would agree with
that. We've argued on Newsmakers that there's too much power in the public employee union's coffers and how much money they get and how they're able to get it. And that has influenced the entire public agenda at the legislature. But yeah, there's a supermajority of one party whose campaigns were financed by the employees of the state. The employees. And the leadership of the public employee unions. So I got an issue with how much money is in elections in that regard.
Sure.
But what do you do? What do you do? You tell them you can't give? You tell them you can't support your candidate or your party? All right. So three bills under consideration. One would set limits on how much you can contribute. I don't understand how we can do this. I thought the Supreme Court weighed in that gift donations were speech, protected speech. But there's people want more disclosure on who's paying for the advertisements, which, again, I thought we already got that. It's at the end of everyone. This commercial was paid for by.
There is that stipulation.
And, of course, trying to illuminate to make more transparent on the funding behind dark money groups that will be used to collect money and then dole it out, kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So you're hiding the true source of the money, right? So another bill, it would send to voters. At least we get to vote on it. It's a question. If it would amend the state constitution.
Right? For what?
It would allow governing bodies, you know, like the city, the county, to pass laws on campaign finance.
That would really make it convoluted.
Yeah. So you have to have this. You have to have this state constitution amendment to get to enable all these other legislations, right? Because right now they don't have the right to make these legislative changes. You with me?
Okay.
So it's the enabling legislation, because then it allows the state to do these control things, right? So you have to change the constitution. It goes to the voters. The voters have to approve it, saying yes, we're going to allow you to make restrictions on campaign finance.
But then another state wouldn't have the same regulations.
Right.
Now, I don't like that.
Yep. Oregon's one of only 5 states in the country that don't have any limits on campaign contributions. So we're kind of in the minority here.
We should be like the other rest of them.
Well, then we would have limits. There's only 5 states. Oregon and 4 other states have no limits. Anybody can write a check for any amount in Oregon.
And what would be the limit?
One bill. There's a House bill. It would limit it to $2,800 from a single individual, at least people for statewide office, right?
Okay.
Senate and circuit court judges could not accept more than $1,500, and House candidates not more than $1,000.
That would make it interesting.
Yeah. And you take, because we know there's people who write, you know, 5- and 6-figure checks, right?
Yes.
So what do they do? Well, they can give it to the party. And that's a loophole that people have concerns with, because they can give it to political action committees for the caucus, for the Democrats, for the Republicans, and then the caucus doles it out. And that's a loophole that, you know, people who are behind this reform, they don't like the loophole.
Mm-hmm. I can see why.
Yeah. So political action committees would be able to give it unlimited amounts of money to candidates for statewide office. So. This is, we're going to run out of time here. We'll be able to pick this up tomorrow, campaign finance reform. I have mixed feelings about it because giving money, you don't want to pass a law that kind of lowers the other party's ability to give money, right?
Right.
You will still want your parties to give money.
Mm-hmm.
So, and how can they, and how can you limit it? And on the other hand, I completely believe that money is buying elections.
Yes.
Money is buying name recognition. It's buying smear campaigns. Money is buying elections. So, what do you do about it?
Double-edged sword.
My father used to talk about some. In other countries, they have limits to when you can start campaigning,
mm-hmm.
and the campaign didn't last 2 years like it is for U.S. president, right?
Yeah, see, it does last too long.
If you can only campaign 90 days before the election, that really limits how much money you're able to spend and need to spend. You got 90 days to get your vote out there. I kind of like that.
That is not a bad idea.
It's not
going to
happen in America, though, because that it would inhibit their free speech.
Ah.
Right.
Let's take a break.
Maybe we'll dive deeper into that tomorrow. Tomorrow we've got a city councilor joining us. We have Councilor Brad Nanke joining us tomorrow, and we'll talk about what's going on at the city council. So let's take a big break right now, because we're going to get Bri Taylor on the phone, and she is major cheerleader and supporter and volunteer extraordinaire for the Marion County Fair. Stick with us. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN, Salem's Listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery.
Welcome back, folks. Brent DeHart here with Dave Bourne. And on the phone with us, we've got Bri Taylor. She is a local realtor who has been involved in the Marion County Fair. How long has it been, Bri?
Hey, well, how long have I been entering the Marion County Fair, or how long have I been on the board?
Both.
Those are two different questions. They suckered me into volunteer probably about 5 years ago.
Okay. And now you're on the board, and you are volunteer extraordinaire, which is your official title I gave you.
Yes, they had business cards made and everything. Actually, I am what's called a key volunteer, and that means that I am on the board, but I'm not a voting member, but I get to attend the meetings and help give some feedback about the fair and give some input.
What I like about the county fair is both Marion and Polk is they're not such a spectacle. The state fair is fun. You know, it's for families, and you got this huge spectacle and all these people and da, da, da. The county fairs, though, are that kind of rural and local feeling.
Yeah.
It's like your local kids are raising these animals and showing them off. They're smaller in terms of you don't have this massive you can lose all your children in the what's that? That's the area called with the carnival.
The
and
carnival, the
rides,
yeah.
Yes,
the
and
ride.
That. But there's still great food. And, you know, you can do the whole fair in a day if you want. And it's, I don't know. I like those. I like the county fairs. So Marion County Fair is coming up in what, about a month?
It is going to be, it's always the second full weekend in July. So this year it hits July 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th. It's a 4-day fair. And it's interesting that you mentioned being able to do the fair in one day. We actually strive to make it so that we have things that you can do on different days, so that it's not just a one-day fair, that you can split it up and you can see something new every day of the fair.
Oh, that's right. Draw us in and bring us back.
Yeah.
You are here today, but if you're not here tomorrow, you're going to miss this.
Right.
That's absolutely. We have each day is something different. On Thursday is our honor day, and we honor our veterans, our military personnel, as well as our seniors. They all get in for free that day. No. On Friday is Awesome 3000, and the first 3,000 people, kids and adults included, that walk through that gate with their Awesome 3000 t-shirt on get in for free.
Mm. Wow. Are there the grown-ups with Awesome 3000 shirts?
Well, we hope not, actually. Okay. Mostly just the kids that come in, because I don't think they let us adults run, at least legally.
That's
on
cool.
That track. And on Saturday is our Ag Day. That night, we do have a rodeo as well as our concert, and on Sunday is Family Day, and we have superheroes that will walk around, and you can meet all kinds of people from your Star Wars characters to Marvel superheroes.
Really? Wow, that's incredible.
We have two huge concerts this year, and each concert is free with your fair admission.
Oh, wow.
So on Friday, we have Restless Heart.
Nice.
And on Saturday, we have Jared Neiman.
Okay. I don't know him.
I don't know him either. Who is he?
Okay, you guys, this is where you pull out your phone and you hit Google.
Okay.
Just say Google, please search Jared Neiman.
And play his music, because I want to be familiar when I go to the concert.
And we want you to sing along. Absolutely.
Okay. Cool. So two free concerts. You got Superhero Day. You got Agriculture Day. You got Veterans Day. It sounds like we got to go all 4 days. And
you
great food.
Go.
So there's it's good that you have to walk around, because there's definitely great ice cream.
Oh,
great
fried
things. You got rides.
There's nothing like fair food, Brent. Come on. And there's no calories.
We have, I got to tell you, actually, Marion County Fair is actually one of the bigger fairs that we have. It's at the Oregon State Fairgrounds, so we do not have our own fairgrounds that we have to maintain all year long. We are, of course, a county entity, so to speak, but we have an all-volunteer board of amazing people who get so much done. We meet all year long, and they're really, I got to tell you, I put a Facebook post up that I was going to talk about a bunch of gossip, but I lied. There's no gossip.
Oh.
It's pretty boring behind the scenes. We all just work really hard and show up and... And out fair, we have a lot of fun, I got to tell you. But,
I talked to Mike Adams this week. I saw him and just accidentally ran into him about Adams Ribs, and he was mentioning there's a barbecue contest, and this is not for professional chefs, but for guys like Dave and Brent, who might be pretty good at something on the grill, and you could enter these things and win a Traeger. I'm like, oh, what? I can win it? I don't have a Traeger.
I need one.
I'm told I should have a Traeger.
I need one for my new house.
And so if I win this grill,
you got to practice.
I get a free one.
You get a free one. So On Sunday, July 14th at 9 a.m. Is our Marion County Fair Barbecue Grill-Off. And thanks to Mike at Adam's Ribs, this thing happens every single year. He's amazing, as most of us already know.
Yes.
And you can go to mcfair.net. And on the website, it's going to be updated regularly. There will be a daily schedule. But that's also where, if you click on the top where it says contest, mm-hmm. that's where it will come down. And you can click on, you can get your entry form to enter this barbecue grill-off. And it is so much fun. And you get to come in, you get to put your do your cooking, and while you wait, you can still enjoy the fair. Everybody hangs out. Mike makes it a really great time.
Do you know what meal won last year? Was it like fried chicken or grilled chicken or steak?
So actually, what it is that we will the fair itself actually provides the meat to be cooked.
Oh, okay.
So you get to decide how you're going to cook it, what you're going to put on it, that kind of stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I can't speak to that. It's Mike's gig. I don't know what he's going to have this year, but I would guess it might be a brisket, maybe. Mm-hmm. It's totally a guess. This is total rumor. Please don't hold me to it.
I think Brent and I should do a cook-off before that, like on Wednesday or Thursday when we're there.
I could be a judge.
No, I think we're gonna do a cook-off when we're there doing newsmakers.
Okay. Hey, Brian, there's other things that people can enter into in contests, right?
Sure.
Show off their wares other than, you know, growing animals and all husbandry things, right? What are the contests?
That is a common misconception that this is only about 4-H and FFA. It's actually not. We have a very large public competition area. And we have everything from textiles, which that'd be like crochet, knitting, sewing, quilts, photography, creative arts, like paintings, drawings, watercolors, hobbies, which could be collections or Legos, poetry. We have floral foods and table setting division, which I'm actually in charge of the table setting division.
Oh, boy.
So, Brent and Dave, I'm totally challenging you right now to set a table and enter the competition.
Oh,
I've got to learn some fancy napkin folding techniques.
Hey, you're in for a treat. I know how to do all that stuff.
Oh, boy.
See? And all of that, we have a beautiful handbook that is online that explains everything as well as all of the general rules and the registration process. You can register online. And on Tuesday and Wednesday of that week of the fair, the 9th and the 10th, and those evenings is when you would bring your different things in to enter the contest. And this is for the public, and this is also for any county that actually touches Marion County. We also will allow them to enter our fair and be a part of it.
All right, we're going to have to let you go, but we'll have you back on a week before the fair. How about that?
And then
I'll be there.
And then we'll talk to her in person when we're broadcasting there.
We're talking to Bri Taylor. She's
setting your table.
Taylor. Right? A salon owner, a realtor, a busy volunteer. Hey, if I'm running a fair, I want Bri Taylor on my side.
Right.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
And thanks for listening to Newsmakers, everyone. This is Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN.
We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.